You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final Hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. It's Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got our buddy Bob McKenzie coming up, I believe. This is the second last time Bob will be on the show. I'm sure we can call him up at some point and get him
wrong
in the future.
Wrong.
You don't think he'll answer our call?
Dude, I work with that guy. I consider him a close friend. In the summertime, no contact. Like, if you send a message saying, hey, can you give me a buzz? Hey, I'm off the grid right now. And just nothing after that.
Off the grid. That's a great line.
Yeah, I'm off the grid.
Off the grid. Leave me alone. Yeah, just go ahead and do your own thing. But this grid is not for you or for
That's
me.
That's right.
I'm
That's
off
right.
it, and we're both off it as a result. Yeah, so maybe you're right. Maybe we're – I don't know what the protocol is there. Are we allowed to reach out to Bob if there's a big scoop?
No, I would say no.
No, I
would say
not.
No. Like, okay. I mean, it's known to just not reach out, like, when he's off the grid. Like, you just don't do it.
I feel like Bob is still going to be breaking massive stories from, like, a pool in Florida.
I don't think so, man. That's not part of his gig anymore.
He's still doing trade deadline in July 1. Yeah. Bob's going to have some contacts. You can bank. It'll be the old, hey, for those of you wondering, not that it matters, I'm just hanging out, but Leafs have traded Mitch Marner. It's
wouldn't
like, oh,
surprise
really?
No, wow. But it'll be, you know how he's cryptic. Like, wouldn't surprise me if the Leafs were doing something by midnight tonight, you know.
Right. Now back to the pool. All the best. Peace out. It's like, okay, well, that's happening. Let's see where it goes from here. You know, what are we talking about? What is this move? We'll catch up with Bob in about 25 minutes, and he'll be back on Thursday. And there's a game ongoing right now. Last time I checked, it was in overtime. Columbus.
Yeah, it is still in overtime, and Calgary's up 1-0. Dylan Dubé scored. That Lucic line is on fire.
Yeah, they're playing well. The third line's been pretty quality for them.
Yeah.
And that's I think, a good matchup for them at Dallas. You know, like Colorado got them last year because they skated them right out of the rink.
Yeah.
Dallas isn't going to do that. They're a bigger, heavier team, and I think that suits Calgary a little bit better.
Well, and Ben Bishop's not playing. You got Hudobin. So both goaltenders, actually, that are starting, Cam Talbot and Anton Hudobin, are unrestricted free agents at the end of this season.
Man, that Bishop's just had some tough luck, hasn't he? Every playoff, he just seems to be hurt.
Yeah.
Well, weird.
Yeah, right before the game, out of nowhere, not playing. I wonder what happened there.
Well, unavailable. You can't talk about injuries, though. What is it? Unfit. Is that what it's called?
Unfit to play.
Yeah,
unfit for a guy that pulls the chute a lot. This is actually like a dream scenario. You don't even have to explain yourself.
Yeah, just unfit to play.
Don't ask me. It's unfit to play. You're not allowed to ask me. How
it's
dare
crazy.
You ask me?
Yeah.
So we've got a couple games going on, and I was trying to pinpoint who I thought was the most marketable player still going. I guess Ovechkin's the obvious answer. McKinnon is a guy for sure. Patrick Kane, I think, would still be in there of the old guard, but Kane is still a recognizable household name. For sure.
Yeah.
Like, there's three off the top of my head, but there's a couple, you know, and I guess in Boston, is there one guy in particular that you market over the others?
Pasta, I guess. But, I mean, it's that top line. Like, Marchand is probably the more household name because his name's all over everything, right? Like, he, you know, good and bad plays, Brad Marchand is involved, right? Like, he's had a couple, you know, the licking incident. He's had some other things.
The licking incident.
Well, we'll call it that.
He had multiple licks. He fired off a couple of licks.
He had a kiss to Komarov, and didn't he have a lick or something? But, you know, the point being is he's always been in the middle of things. But, you know, you look at Matthew Tkachuk's fighting right now as we speak. Like, there's a marketable
name.
That's
a guy, actually, I wrote down is Matthew Tkachuk. I don't think the league feels like they can market him. I think they feel very uneasy about his game. Because it's too old school, it's a little too rough for people, and you know, everything's got to be G-rated and all good and all fun. And you know, on Instagram, you wouldn't dare post a fight or a chirp or whatever. How dare you? It's got to be nice goals or a saucer pass or a big stop. You know, that's effectively the marketing campaign in 2020. because the pendulum has swung so far, which is understandable because it used to be bedlam. You know, they would promote bedlam and craziness, and I don't think that helped the sport. But yeah. I think there can be a middle ground, as I've said many times over the past few weeks. And I think Matthew Tkachuk is a perfect example. This is a guy who I think at one point in his career is going to score 40 in a season. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he had 40 goals.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's a unicorn in today's game, though.
He is.
Like, he's not, you know, a little like, bit of Tom
Wilson.
What
would the price be to trade for Matthew Tkachuk? Like, what would Calgary ask for? I'm not even saying one team's calling him up. But if you're Trey Living and for whatever reason, you know, hypothetically speaking, Tkachuk goes, I want out, and they go, all right, we're going to get you out. How do you work out a deal?
It's a star player. It's another star player. It's star player for star player. Like, even, you know, when there was an argument as to whether you believe the Scheifele hit or not, like, everyone acknowledged Mark Scheifele is an elite superstar, and so is Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah, who, it's like when Colorado needed a D-man, they called San Jose and said, what's it going to take to get Ozalinch here? And they said, Owen Nolan. Okay, that's what it takes. Yeah. They had to trade Owen Nolan to get Sandis Ozalinch.
I understand that. I guess what I'm saying is Tkachuk is you couldn't possibly supply the same game. You know, like you couldn't find tit for tat. You just couldn't.
Right.
Like, how are you going to find a guy that is going to score 30
you
to 35?
You aren't.
That's hitting. That's the most hated player. Yeah, of course not. Of course you don't. Like,
right.
And that fell right in their lap. Like, what a pick. He was a top 10 pick.
You
it's trade not like
him
it was
for
a reach.
You trade him for his brother. That's basically. Cause
yeah,
they're,
I guess.
They're
yeah,
the same.
Maybe you're right. All right, so the Blue Jays, I guess they're home. I guess. They're in Buffalo tonight, which is technically their home for the next couple of months. It's been a while. They've been on the road for a long time, and they got Miami in town tonight, Ryu on the mound. Here's our Blue Jays insider and reporter, Scott Mitchell. Are you considering this a home game? Like, how do we title this game tonight, Scotty?
I mean, look, man, it's baseball in 2020. I don't know that any of these teams are playing home games because when you watch the sport, it's just not the same without fans. So, I mean, yeah, look, this is the culmination of two long months of trying to figure out where this team was going to go, and it's been a winding road, and I think they're just happy to have a spot they can call home. They can kick their feet up. You know, they've done some work down there. It's still a minor league facility, let's be real here, but, you know, it'll be a little more comfortable, and it's interesting. I've been talking to a bunch of people about who has the home field advantage here, and, you know, I don't think there is one. But when you look at it, what they have to do is they have to win a few ball games there, and then you're going to have other teams coming in, and you're going to have them kind of going out to this makeshift clubhouse behind the right field wall in a tent. And, you know, if the Blue Jays can win some ball games there, I think at some point in the next couple of weeks you could say, hey, yeah, maybe it is a little home field advantage. But, you know, right now it's just a very unique situation for this team. And, you know, like I said, it's been 2 months of trying to find a home, and they finally got one, and we'll see what they can do with it, I guess.
Scotty, what is your sense of what they think of Buffalo? I like Buffalo. Some people hate on it. It is cold in the wintertime, but what do you think the players' vibe is or mood about being in Buffalo as their home kind of, not that they can go out and do stuff, but what's the vibe about it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think, you know, Buffalo, Rochester, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, wherever they were going to end up, I mean, I don't think it matters much to them. They were really looking at the facility-wise and what kind of amenities they have, and that's the big difference here. You know, I don't think any of the players or coaching staff cares what city they're in, but, you know, right now, from amenity and you know, from a MLB infrastructure-wise, they're a little bit behind the eight ball, even though they did put a whole bunch of stuff in there and really creatively use a lot of the spaces in terms of the concourse to, put gyms and weight rooms and batting cages and things like that. But, like I said, it's been 2 months of trying to figure out where this team is going to go. And when you go back to June, they were going to be in Dunedin. And then when you go back to late June, they thought they were going to be in Toronto. And then you go to mid-July, and they said no to Toronto. And then you look at Pittsburgh, you look at Baltimore, and then finally they circled back to this. So, you know, like I keep saying, these guys are just happy to have a spot to kind of call home, and we'll see what they can turn it into at this point. Because, right now they're three games under 500, and, you know, it's been a decent start. But, this team right now probably should be a team that's over 500. So no matter where they're playing, they've got to clean up some of the stuff that's going on and try to find a way to win some ball games here.
Yeah, with Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, and it seems like it's a pretty obvious focus at this point. Like, the bats have got to come alive. They are just not generating runs. They're not getting on base. They're relying on solo home runs, and that's just not going to cut it. I mean, I think they're 29th in the league in on-base percentage, and that's just not good enough, and it's not ever going to be good enough. Their pitching has held up fine for the most part. Their bats have got to come alive. And the focal point on this show, and I think with your articles and a lot of people that are following this team, lies with Vladdy Guerrero Jr. And his numbers are truly awful right now. It's early. It is, but it's a 60-game season. You don't get 40 or 50 games to kind of ease into it and make sure everything gets calibrated the proper way. He's got to get going. Do you think maybe being back in a park that he used to own, could that maybe spark something for Vladdy?
Well, I mean, you know, everything you said there is true. I mean, tied for 30th in the league and runs scored at 3 a game. You know, you're not going to win many ball games like that. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, probably a good spot that they're still 5-8 at this point because they haven't buried themselves. You know, it easily could be a better record, easily could be a worse record if the pitching doesn't keep them in there in a few ball games. But, you know, you said it. I mean, they went out and they tried to fix their pitching in the offseason, and you know, obviously with Nate Pearson coming up and some of these young kids, Thomas Hatch has absolutely looked unbelievable. Ryan Barucki as well. You know, there's some pitching depth, but yeah, you need to score runs. And Guerrero, we talked to Ross Atkins about him today. And, you know, there's some definite concern within the organization at this point. Again, it's a very, very small sample size. And as we know, baseball is all about sample sizes. But when you look at the nuts and bolts of his swing right now, he's hitting way too many ground balls. Same problem as last year. He's not elevating the ball. But this year, he's really being a little bit more aggressive than we've ever seen before, kind of swinging at pitches that, you know, are kind of out of his comfort zone and not being able to find a comfort zone within an at-bat to find a pitch to drive. So, you know, this guy's got a lot of learning to do. It's clear, and you know, it's interesting going back to a year plus ago, and you know, this guy looked like a guy who would come in and look like a Ronald Acuna, a guy who could hit 320 right off the hop and really kind of be a guy in the middle of the order that's a threat right away. And that just hasn't happened. And it's interesting when you look at how the dynamic of this offense could come together, because you know, Bo Bichette's had a pretty good start. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has flashes. But if you don't have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in terms of being a top prospect in baseball and being a guy that can really be the meat of that order, kind of the linchpin and kind of drive in, you know, a lot of those runs, because there's a lot of table setters on this team and you need somebody to drive them in. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to watch him work through these next 35 games to see what he can come up with, because right now there's definite concern in the organization about where he's going to go and what this bat is going to look like down the road.
Well, you mentioned Acuna Jr., and I think Anthopoulos and company down in Atlanta, they pulled off one of the all-time great steals in getting him on that contract that could be a 10-year deal, and it's not going to pay a lot of money, relatively speaking. And they offered it to him. Obviously, they were taking a bit of a gamble. He was a kid, but he had an unbelievable year last year. I think they're confident now that this guy is going to be a rock star in the majors. And I remember asking, I think it was Ross and Mark, and I think you and I have talked about this before, Scotty, could the Jays look to do something similar with Vladdy? Do you think they would do that today? If Vladdy came to them and said, I'll take the exact same deal Acuna took, do you think they would offer it to him?
That's a great question. I would have to think at this point. You know, you'd think long and hard about it, but now he's a first baseman. You've seen, you know, kind of the conditioning issues kind of crop up a couple times now. You know, that's a real interesting one because, as you know, Vladdy's a 21-year-old kid right now. His body does not exactly look like you want a 21-year-old kid to look early in his career. He's already DHing quite a bit. He's moved to first base. You know, the swing really hasn't found the plane in terms of launch angle and in terms of tapping into all that raw power. So, you know, I don't know. That's a tough one. I'm not a big fan of those deals in some instances. Like, I really think Bo should be a guy you should look at. I think you can look at Nate, but with the volatility of pitchers and injuries and things like that, it's tough. And, you know, I think going year to year and trying to figure out what these kids are for the next couple of years is probably the prudent move. But as we know, Mark Shapiro, he kind of, you know, helped these deals along in the early 2000s with the Cleveland Indians. And I've asked him numerous times about, you know, whether they would look at these types of deals, and they tend to happen in spring training. And, you know, he hasn't been shy about the fact that, you know, they have talked about him and, you know, how serious that is, who knows. But, you know, at this point, you know, I think this 60-game season really gives them a good idea of what these kids are going to be heading into what we hope is going to be a full 2021 season. And then I wouldn't be surprised if you hear some more talk about those deals probably next spring training, especially if things are back to normal.
Let's discuss the manager here, Charlie Montoyo, who is, you know, he's an optimistic guy. He's kind of a public cheerleader about the group, and I think that's what they liked about his disposition. They knew they were going to be young. They knew they weren't going to win a lot of games. They wanted someone bilingual that could come in here and calm down the clubhouse and make sure everything is all good while they get through a bit of a storm.
They're this close.
Yeah, and I'm, yeah. Listen, I publicly he's saying things. I hope privately he's not actually sitting there giddy thinking that this team is on the verge of breaking out, because they don't appear to be. But today he's got Joe Ponick DHing tonight. Like, Ponick's numbers are off the charts horrendous. He's a utility player. And he's never DHed in his career. He's been in the league for almost 10 years. What is Montoyo doing here? Like, why would he think this is gonna spark what he apparently is telling us is something that is on the verge of breaking out?
Well, you know, 167 having a DH, you know, with zero extra base hits on the season, hitting eighth, you know, I guess that is a serious problem when you think about it.
Yeah, I would say so.
No, and that kind of typifies the offense, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, when Charlie Montoyo was hired, he was not their first choice. He was not their second choice. He was not their third choice. That's not to say he's the wrong choice, but a lot of people looked at the situation as, is this guy a placeholder as this kind of developmental, you know, engine keeps chugging along? And then when this team is ready to compete, is there someone else, you know, calling the shots back there? And you know, I think this first 13 games has probably given us an indication that that may be the case. You know, this may be a ball club over the next couple of years that, you know, shows flashes and then really needs to kind of make that managerial change in order to take the next step. You know, we don't know that at this point, but it is an interesting dynamic with Montoyo at the helm, because he is positive. You know, he's ran into a lot of kind of bullpen management things over the first couple of weeks of the season. And, you know, I think some of the scrutiny has been surprising to them. And this is the shift that they've made over this last few months of going from a team that's, you know, strictly rebuilding to one that's trying to get over the hump and get to that point where you're looked at as a, maybe not a serious contender, but at least a team that is going to be to push to be in contention. And I think a lot of the scrutiny over, you know, this last 3 weeks or so compared to what he dealt with in his first year and a half as a manager is completely different. And, you know, I think there are some warning signs that say, you know what, maybe this ball club needs to look at where they're at and, you know, in terms of what is happening on the bench and, you know, how these managerial moves are affecting, you know, the final outcome of games. Because you can make the argument that they've lost 3 or 4 games at this point just based on the moves they're making. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see over this next kind of year or so how he settles in and really the reaction of the front office when this season comes to an end. Because, you know, nobody's got to the point where Charlie Montoyo has needed a vote of confidence. But I think when we're sitting here on September 27th, unless they do something amazing in the next 6 weeks, you're probably going to need to have that answer. And you're going to ask Ross Atkins, you know, is Charlie Montoyo the right guy for you guys moving forward? And I think it's a completely fair question at this point.
Yep, I'm with you on that. Great stuff, Scotty. Enjoy it tonight. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
All right, cheers, fellas. Take care.
Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. And this is another example of how crazy this year is, and it still is early. There's still, you know, 40-plus games, give or take, for every team.
That goes by real fast, Brian.
It does. I mean, Detroit's 9-5. The Tigers are 9-5. The Orioles are 7-7. Like, those two teams were expected to be absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, Detroit especially, right?
Awful. Horrendously awful. And again, they still might get there. They may win another 5 games total the rest of the way. Like, the light may go on and it's like, what are we doing here? But that makes it, I think, tougher for maybe Blue Jay fans to accept that this wasn't an opportunity for you to run off something here, right? Like, there's an opportunity here with expanded playoffs in a shortened year. Go out and get it, you know, sneak in. Because if Detroit sneaks in, or Baltimore, and I'm not willing to put money on that right now, but if they're hovering, you certainly should be, you know, based on talent. You got more talent. You're a deeper team. Yeah. But we've recognized that a lot this week, that doesn't guarantee you anything. Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, will join us, get his take on what's going on with the games this afternoon, what he expects to hear from the Maple Leafs tomorrow, where the Leafs take all of this into the future. We'll catch up with Bobby Mack. Our Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Bobby Mack coming up in just a moment. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. And the Leafs will speak tomorrow. Shanahan, Dubas, and Keefe around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So we'll see what kind of answers they have, if they have any answers at all. Not just for the past five games. I mean, the whole season. It's not just about what we saw over the weekend. It's about the 70 games that we saw before the shutdown even occurred. And it's currently a game in overtime. 2-2 in overtime. Late into the first overtime, Columbus and Tampa. And Calgary's up 2-0.
Dylan Dubé with both goals.
Perfect.
Milan Lucic with his fifth point of the playoffs.
I saw that. Very nice.
Impressive.
Good for him, man.
Yeah, happy for him. You know, people wrote him off, and you know, at least in the critical times, he showed up, and that's mm-hmm. nice to see. You know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he was written off because it was really tough. Like he had a really tough run. Clearly,
for sure, absolutely. You
know. But he's still tough as nails, and if he can get moving and get in the right spot, if he can chip in, he's going to be a guy that you want on your team. I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, so absolutely. I got breaking news here from a buddy, a friend of the show. I will text you after. He said, true story, our cleaning lady fired us because our house was such a disaster.
No way. Nice.
Well, have you ever been fired from a...
I'm telling you, they might just, if they walk in and it's a pigsty, they might just say, actually, I'm not doing this. Mm. But I don't
know.
That's
classic.
Yeah, I guess so.
I've never heard of that.
That's how dare you, right? Like you're showing up to do your job and you want a clean slate. You want to be able to pull it off. And if the place is a disaster and you're not there to pick up the laundry off the floor, do the laundry. Oh. You're there to kind of put in some work. So that's interesting. Someone gets fired by their own cleaning person.
Cleaning lady is just like, I've had enough.
Goon show here at your house. Yeah. All right, here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent, boys. How you doing today?
Good, good.
We're doing
Ask
well.
Ask him the question, Hazy. Hazy wants to know, Bobby, if we ever had a question like in the future, we understand your time's running out here on this show. Are we allowed to just fire up the Bobby Sell and say, what are your thoughts on this?
Well,
I said, no way.
Well, you could try. and whether or not I pick up the phone would entirely hinge on, A, whether I'm sober, B, whether I have an answer to the question, and C, whether I think I might have anything to add. But in a lot of cases, you might say, oh, I wonder what Bobby Mack thinks, and I'm listening to you guys, and they're going to call me? I have no idea what I think about that. I don't even care. I'm not answering the phone.
I don't even care.
But as I said, if I'm not too deep into my cups and it's a pleasant day and I'm sitting there and I thought, I wouldn't mind talking about that, you go for it. And I just have to work out a little fee schedule with Jeffy boy here on the the emergency call-in line. So
the bat line, I like it. Yeah, the grappler will be, he'll be grappling that information for you. Believe me, that's, I just figure, you're going to still have some scoops, and I'm picturing it, Bob.
No, I think, I even said this. I said that there's no chance that we could get a hold of you, so I'll stand by that, and I think I will defend you in that right, because you're being diplomatic, but there's no chance we're going to be able to get a hold of you. And then secondly, I think that you'll float a tweet once in a while here or there and be like, wouldn't surprise me if the Leafs were going to do something by midnight.
That's what I'm thinking. The old bat line on Twitter. That's what I expect.
Well, there are, I am working trade deadline day. I am working free agent frenzy day. Actually, trade deadline day, I actually agreed to come in the night before. There's always a show the night before. So I said I would come in and do that as well. So nice. I will sometimes have to dust off the old phone and text and harass people for information and see what I get. But I might be out of practice, too. Might be just there window dressing.
Right.
Getting dregs and Pierre and Frank beverages or going to go over to the food table and see if I can cater for them or something.
Yeah, it'll be a whole new world. And, you know, the Leafs will – who knows what they're going to do with the trade deadline next year. I don't think people are looking that far ahead. We're waiting to see what they're going to say tomorrow. Shanahan and Dubas are speaking tomorrow afternoon. And I guess it doesn't really matter what they say publicly. They can say anything. It doesn't mean that it's going to, you know, go into action right away. But what's your sense of their mood? You know, not just based on Sunday and even the past week and a half, but the previous 70 games were nothing to write home about. This team has been disappointing all year. What do you sense the mood is in Leafland behind closed doors?
Well, I think, you know, in most of those situations, I think there will be a little bit more urgency than in the past. But, you know, from an outward point of view, in terms of what the public perception is, it won't change. That's, you know, organizations don't run that way. I don't think. I'd be surprised if they come up guns blazing at the year end postmortem, and we're not good enough, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. It'll be more like, you know, we obviously need to make some changes, and we need to get better, but, you know, we're going to work on that. And the calm, measured approach publicly, but I would think behind the scenes. I mean, all general managers, and Dubas in particular, to varying degrees, they're process-driven individuals, and nobody likes to hear that because talking about the process is really boring. It makes for bad radio, makes for bad TV. It makes for, if you're a fan, you know, that's the last thing in the world you want to hear. And sometimes you like your GMs or coaches to come out and say, that's unacceptable what happened, and what have you. So I'll be curious to see. I've not spoken under normal circumstances. I probably would have done, if I hadn't been in the throes of basically packing it in, I probably would have done a little more homework before they speak to find out what exactly it is, what the approach is. So now you've even got me curious. So see, and this is why you probably don't want to call me in the future, because you just asked me a really good question, and I'm like, I don't really know.
I have no idea.
I think realistically, they've got to read the room. And if you read the room, you know that the level of patience and the fans' attitudes toward things right now, everybody's a little owly, a little squirrely, and understandably so. Although, I mean, and no one wants to hear this, but, you know, how long has Dubas been the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs? Now, he's been in the organization for multiple years, but how long has he been running the show and calling the shots? And if it's whatever it is, a couple of years, that's not a long time for a general manager to do what he wants to do and to get where he needs to get to. Now, the flip side, and I've said this many times over, is with the way the salary cap is, and now adding in the added wrinkle of the pandemic and the financial ramifications of the pandemic, which is to suggest the flat salary cap just got flatter for a longer period of time. It's not as conducive to, you know, the process. And, you know, you're not in a position where you can say, well, you know what, took Washington 10 years to figure it out. It took St. Louis core group, you know, 6, 7, 8 years to figure it out. You know, you don't have Austin Matthews for 6, 7, 8 years. You don't, you know, it's a different climate now, and so everything gets accelerated a little bit, but not to the point where, you know, I would expect they're coming out guns blazing and saying, yeah, we're gonna trade at least one or two of our big name forwards, and we're gonna roll in here a Norris defenseman. But I think as you just look at the team realistically, you know, with the way I look at it, you got Riley and you got Muzzin, and those guys are top four defensemen on every team in the National Hockey League, pretty much in my mind. And so then you got to fill in the other two spots in your top four. Now, on any given day, might Dermott or Hall sneak into the four spot? Yeah, they might, you know. Is Rasmus Sandin going to eventually be there? Yeah, I think he will. But I think in the short term, he's probably coming in as more of a third pair guy to start until he gets his game well-rounded. So you need to get a, in my mind, they need to get a significant defenseman that would give them Riley, Muzzin, and this other significant defenseman. And, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, you'd like another big name at the four spot, but with the financial ramifications and the fact that you do have Dermott and you do have Hall, You know, maybe you've got Liljegren. We'll see where his game's at. You've got Sandin. You know, that's kind of the outlook that I see. And then the question becomes, how do you go out and get that one defenseman? Who is it? What's it going to cost you financially? What's it going to cost acquisition price? And away you go. You know, people are going to say, well, get Pietrangelo. Well, you know, maybe so. The financial part of it might not work. The acquisition cost would be none because he's a free agent. That's presuming he wants to play in his hometown, which just because it's his hometown, it doesn't mean to me that he necessarily would.
Bob, you sense that, you know, maybe in these Zoom calls tomorrow that somebody would ask Shanny if he was on the same page as Dubas, like from a philosophical standpoint?
Somebody might, yeah. You never know. And I honestly, I don't get the, I know people, you know, the funny thing is that people look at the way that Brendan Shanahan played the game. You know, he fought, he hit, he was, you know, power forward of sorts, but he was also a really high-skilled guy that could score from far out, tops of the right. circle, one-timer, and make plays and all that sort of stuff. And they want to stereotype Dubas and say, well, he likes smaller players and he likes softer skilled guys. And you know, and I don't necessarily buy the stereotypes as much. And I think you've seen over time, Dubas has started to, you know, the Kyle Clifford was brought in. Kyle Clifford was brought in because Dubas felt like they needed more of that. And I'm sure that he and Brendan Shanahan have lots of conversations philosophically. And I think anybody asking the question, are you guys on the same page? It's a good question to ask, I guess. But I'm going to presume that these guys talk every day and that Dubas is well attuned to what Shanny likes and Shanny's well attuned to what Dubas likes. And between the two of them, I wouldn't expect that there would be a significant void between what one thinks, how the team should be built versus the other, to be honest with you.
We have Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider. So the Rangers win the lottery last night. They got the first pick. Is it a lock they take Lafreniere? And if so, you know, how does that maybe expedite their rebuild? How good could this team in New York be in the next year or two?
Oh, I never say anything's 100% lock. And I'm sure because the Rangers they're an interesting team because they're kind of rebuilding and the reloading or whatever, but they've got Panarin and they've got Zibanejad and, you know, so it's not like it's, you know, just a team with a whole bunch of kids on it. But they have made a real concerted effort over the last number of years to acquire first round picks, hold on to their first round picks for an organization that quite frankly used to just trade them away, but they were able to sign Chris Kreider and hold on to him. So it's not like they don't have veteran presence and that. So they're going to, and I think Jeff Gorton, because he's got a little bit, you know, he's got some eggs in the here and now basket with Panarin and Zibanejad and Kreider and, you know, and then you've got, you know, some eggs in the futures basket with Kako and Buchnevich and some of the younger guys. You know, my guess is we will hear prior to the draft, well, you know, we're not shopping the first round pick, but if somebody calls, we'll listen. You know, LA might be a team that, in my mind, might have more interest in a guy like Stutzla than Byfield. That's just anecdotal, just my opinion. But
yeah, okay.
But always skeptical. But anyways, you know, is there a premium to be paid? You know, if they said, hey, we can. We're not 100% married to Lafreniere, but you know, if we are, you know, maybe we let on we're not, and see if there's anybody that wants to offer us something to not take somebody else, or you know, play those games. So I think Jeff Gorton will keep all his options open, but the consensus, you know, number one, pretty clear consensus number one for most teams, I believe, is Lafreniere.
What do you think they'll do with him, Bobby? This kid's going to go on a stretch where he might not be on the ice doing productive things for, what, yeah, like 6-7 months?
Yeah, they're all in that boat. I mean, now, some of these European kids, whether, you know, if the European leagues get going here, I know they initially said they'd be going by September 1st or whatever, and then they've backed that off to October or November or whatever. So everybody's kind of in the same boat, although the Europeans might have a little bit of a leg up. But it's, I mean, to your point, though, it's not just Lafreniere. And if Lafreniere really wanted to, I mean, and I don't think it's worth it because all things being equal, the NHL season is going to start in December 1, January 1, whatever the case may be. But he'd be, if the European leagues are going, I know his agent, Emily Castonguay, will be looking. I talked to her about this earlier. They would look at any and all options for him. So if, you know, if the German league's going in September, October, and they don't think the league's going to be playing until December or January, they could look at going to Europe. Now, the flip side of that is, do you really, now you're the number one overall pick. Everybody in the world's not playing as much hockey as they used to. And all across Canada and the United States, junior hockey, college hockey, it's all on the shelf for now, or it could be on the shelf for now. If you're the number one overall guy and you're getting ready to go in the NHL, do you really want to go over and play in Europe and maybe, you know, risk getting your knee popped out or your shoulder or getting a concussion or what have you, when you know that, hey, I'm playing, if the Rangers take them, I'm playing for the New York Rangers and training camp could begin on November 1st. So let's get after it. And he's got to be, I think he's got to be NHL ready. He's had the 3 full years in junior. He's a late birthday. So, you know, he's just got to be patient like everybody else. But to your point, though, you know, I'm fascinated to see what the overall impact is on the development of all players, all young players, and the game of hockey, period. The American Hockey League could be in mothballs. Junior hockey could be in mothballs for a while. College. And you've got this huge swath of players. Every team in the NHL, all the people they've drafted and they've signed, and they're just not playing. And does that really significantly hinder their development? And what's the impact on the game overall for the next year or two or three?
Well, it gives a chance for the worst guy on the team to say the rest of his life, I would have made it if the league didn't get shut down. I'll say that.
That'll be my story.
That would be mine, too. I'd be like, hey, I would have been in the NHL, but, you know, they had to shut us down for a year. That was my big development year. That's where I was going to leapfrog the rest of the league. But, yeah, the OHL, I mean, they announced last week that they're planning on playing, but they said they needed fans, didn't they, Bob? I thought that's what they said.
Yeah, if they didn't say it officially, I can tell you for an absolute fact that the owners and the people who run junior hockey teams are not in a position where they could play a 60-game schedule and with no fans in the stands.
Right.
And if it's only, you know, small groups, even, I don't know what the equation, the financial equations will work out to, but, you know, everything they said, every date I hear, we're going to do this on this date, November 1 or December 1, and I know the OHL said December 1. For me, I'm assuming those are all targets until we get better clarification on what can or can't be done in terms of the size of gatherings. Because if you can only put 50 or 100 people together at any one time, I'd be really, really, really surprised if junior hockey across Canada is able to have a season with no more than 50 or 100 fans in the stands. I just can't see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you never know. I read online today that Russia's got a vaccine that they've pushed through. So,
right. Everyone's taking it. It's,
yeah,
it's
no
the new
problem.
Thing over there.
Shot of vodka.
It's a shot of vodka out of a hollowed out potato.
Just get fired right up and forget what planet you're on.
Shot of vodka and a dart.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
What do you do?
All right, Bob. Well, enjoy the games. I mean, there's double OT going right now.
That's crazy. This could be the night that Carolina and Boston start at midnight.
Yep. It feels like that is already official that they're getting pushed back, you know, at least a half an hour, if not more than that. So that's not a surprise, but we'll do it again on Thursday. Great stuff, as always.
Thanks, boys.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. This game is in double OT. Columbus.
Yeah, and there was a little dust up at the end of the first OT. Corpusalo got into it. I couldn't see who with. I think it was Palat or somebody, but they were. And then both teams converged at center ice.
Ooh. Love
so
it.
Yeah,
love it.
Spicy. Well, there's history between these two teams.
Little irritability. Yeah, you can see that's some bite. I don't mind that.
Yep, for sure. And it's a seven-game series, so that much more time to kind of get into it and hate on each other and the ebbs and flows of a true playoff round beginning today. So we'll track that. And the Jays are in action again, finally at home, quote-unquote, down in Buffalo. So we'll look ahead to that tonight. The Raps are off today. They're back in action tomorrow at 6:30 against Philly. You can hear that game right here on TSN Radio. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so we're in double OT in the hockey game. The Jays are already in action down in Buffalo, and they are clean sheet through one, I believe. Maybe it's still the top of the first. But some pictures being shown. I think Rob Longley posting pics of, like, fans in Buffalo, obviously outside of the building, but lining up outside of the building up
any
a ramp.
Condo seats available like Chicago?
I don't know if it's that extensive, but I guess you can see inside the park. So if you're in Buffalo and you've been waiting for Major League Baseball for a long time, I guess it's finally shown up.
That's not bad, though. I don't mind that.
Yeah, it's you can't get in there, but anyway, I mean, we were talking about it yesterday, if NFL teams are going to hope to have fans back, and someone sent me a note yesterday saying that they got notice that they're expecting fans in some stadiums. Like, some teams are already reaching out to their fan bases saying, you know, it's go time. You get season tickets. You're welcome to show up. But
would you go to Buffalo? Would you go down? If the borders were open.
No, I wouldn't.
And the Pack was playing in Buffalo.
No way. Not in the U.S.
Non-negotiable.
Not in the States. I wouldn't try. How about today? 33 new cases in Ontario.
Yeah,
33.
Cool.
Do you know how great that is?
Yeah.
You know, that's an incredible accomplishment. We're not through it by any means, but we are in a way better position than we were a few months ago, and way better position than many different places around the world.
Yeah, keep it that way.
Yeah, keep rocking, man. And you know, that and there's a reason for that. It's because we're not opening up stadiums, and you can't get together with hundreds of people, if not thousands of people.
Yeah,
but. I have a very different approach to what we're doing here and how safe I would feel here as opposed to anywhere in the States, for sure. Yeah. I'm not going to a game in the U.S. right now. No way. But people will show up. I'll guarantee you those seats are filled. I'd be surprised if they weren't. It won't be 100% capacity, but it's 25%
capacity.
Then
what's the sense? Like, it's the NFL. Just have no fans. Why do something crazy like that? It's just...
Well, does the NFL need fans?
They play by their own rules.
Do they need fans to make money? I would say no, right? The NFL?
No, much less than any other league. The TV money they rake in is crazy.
Exactly.
Crazy. But let's say, you know, it's opening night Kansas City against Houston. They just won the Super Bowl. I'm assuming the flag will be going up. It's opening night. I would be surprised if they open up the doors and say we can fill this up to 25% capacity. I'd be shocked if it wasn't filled to 25% capacity.
It would be. But I mean, both of you guys have been watching a ton of sports. Are you really missing fans in the stands?
No, I couldn't care less.
Watching it on TV is still the same entertainment value from a fan's perspective for me. Like
it's
cool.
It's not the exact same. Having fans there, the shot. I think you lose sight of, you know, showing the crowd,
Tiger Woods,
the reaction,
chip shot that goes in.
I don't care. I don't care if it's to see the tanning bed king behind the Leafs bench.
Well,
like,
that's a one-off,
I don't care.
Like again, like O just said, that Morikawa shot, that tee shot on 16.
Yeah,
the
Justin
Thomas putt, you know, a month ago. You hit a big shot to walk off, like the Lakers hit a walk off basically last night. Kuzma hit a big shot. That happens at the Staples
Center. Yeah, you're right.
Center.
Like, I guess, I mean, that comeback the Leafs had on Friday.
Exactly.
The building
perfect
would have exploded.
Example. Oh, well, the roof would have exploded. If they came back
right.
and scored three and under three and then Matthews scored an OT, that was sorely lacking fans.
I would argue, though, Brian, let me ask you this, and this is because I think it was who Ray Bourque admitted on our show saying I think he left the building when the Leafs were up, correct? Did he not say that?
Yeah, I think he did when they were up
4-1.
It was
like 4-1. Yeah. How many people, when Boone Jenner made it 3-0?
Half the building at least.
Gone, right?
At
would've
least
been gone.
Half the building. Minimum.
More.
Half the building. Yeah,
and
they would have cleared it up.
But you're right. Like, they would have cleared out and been running for the exits. And you wonder if the crowd was there, had they reacted different, if people were throwing things on the ice and stuff like that. You know what I mean? That messes with the psyche of a team, too.
Yeah, it's a very valid point. I mean, I guess we'll never know the answer.
No,
and it'll probably never happen again, just because it never had before. Like, no team facing elimination and come back in under 4 minutes and score three goals that quickly.
Agreed,
so it's not a Leaf thing. It's just that's hockey. It's very, very difficult to picture that ever happening again. It might, but chances of it happening here are slim to none. Yeah. But I mean, listen, there's still the sports. It's been fun. There's been some great moments. I've still been captivated. But I think maybe we've forgotten the importance of just the background that fans can supply to sporting events, especially the biggest games.
Yeah,
you know, just
right.
just a
you're
regular
right.
season game, whatever. You know, a Jays game tonight against Miami, there'd be 15,000 people at the stadium. You know, it wouldn't make that big of a difference. But playoff game, game five, you know, Raptors game seven, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're out of here. Jerry's percentages tomorrow. The Leafs brass are speaking tomorrow afternoon. Sure, we'll have some audio. We'll see. Can't confirm or deny. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.